after the sages cursed the two devotee gatekeepers, Jaya and Vijay, the Lord immediately appeared there. He came there upon his lotus feet because he was thinking that the sages were so angry due to their inability to see me, having been checked from seeing me. Therefore, to protect my devotees, I will come so fast, and then they will see me, and then their anger naturally will be dispelled. So the Lord appeared there, and in such a wonderful way, and the summer whisks were fanning him and creating a gentle breeze which moved the pearls which were surrounding the bottom of the umbrella which was shading the Lord, auspiciously shading the Lord. How wonderful was the scene. And the four Kumaras who were fixed on the Brahman platform, who were accomplished yogis, they actually saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In text 38, it describes how they actually saw before them the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sages actually saw him. Who was formerly visible only within their hearts. And in Bhagavad Sandarbha, Anuchet 79, Srila Jiva Goswami says that this text, referring to 38, it affirms that the Supreme Personality of Godhead may be directly perceived. One can actually see the Lord, Premanjana Chorita Bhakti Vilochanena. If one's eyes are pure, coated with prema, one can actually see the Lord directly, Shakshad Darshan. So that's something on the positive that this verse shows. And Srila Jiva Goswami also states that this text, text 38, it refutes the following ideas, because different people have different concepts of the Lord. So, one concept is that the absolute truth is invisible. No one can see him. Refuted by this text. Second, that the goodness, sudasattva, that the Lord's form is composed of, is material. Even though it's pure, it's sattva of this world, some people will say. The Mayavadis specifically say this. They say that when the Lord, when the impersonal, this is their philosophy, comes down into this world, he is affected by the mode of goodness and he is called Ishvara. And when the jivas, when the Lord comes down affected by passion and ignorance, they are called jiva. Refuted, because the four Kumaras could not be impressed of anything composed of the material energy. So that concept is refuted here, Srila Jiva Goswami says. Third, that the Lord's form is a transformation of the material mode of goodness. Has something to do with the mode of goodness. Again, the four Kumaras were above each and every one of the modes of material nature. They could not be impressed, appreciate anything on the material level. They were above that. And the fourth conception that this refutes is that the Lord's form has a large quantity of the mode of goodness. Again, same reasons. So after the Lord appeared, the next texts describe his beauty. In text 39, his affectionate glance His affectionate smile and his affectionate glance, the four Kumaras saw that. And they were touched. They, who were immovable in their fixedness, in their conception, in personal conception, it started to shake. Then in text 40, which we also read yesterday, described the form of the Lord. Before that, the description was only that which was surrounding the Lord, practically speaking. But his beautiful form, his yellow cloth, his garland of flowers, his lovely wrists covered with bracelets, and one hand he rested upon Garuda, and he twirled the lotus flower in his other hand. In text 41, his cheeks were enhanced, or rather the beautiful shark-shaped or makara-shaped earrings that graced his ears, that hung down from his ears. They were like lightning, but they were made still more beautiful and more effulgent by the effulgence of the Lord's cheeks. They outshone lightning. His crown was gem-studded, and his neck was adorned with the kastuba gem, the necklace which comes down, and the gem is placed on the Lord's heart, and it represents the living entities. Text 42, which we haven't read yet. The exquisite beauty of Narayan, being many times magnified by the intelligence of his devotees, was so attractive that it defeated the pride of the goddess of fortune in being most beautiful. So there was a competition, difficult to decide who was more beautiful, the Lord or the goddess of fortune who was by his side. My dear demigods, who's speaking? So he's telling the demigods, the Lord who thus manifested himself is worshipable by me, by Lord Shiva, and by all of you. The sages, the four Kumaras, regarded him with unsated eyes, and they joyously bowed their heads at his lotus feet. So they immediately, after seeing him, their eyes were unsatisfied in the sense that they wanted to see more and more and more. That is the nature of the Lord's beauty. One doesn't become tired or satiated upon seeing it. If we engage any of our senses on any of the sense objects in this world, it is just a matter of time before the senses become sick of them and want some other engagement or some rest. Whatever the sense is, it will become tired and have had enough of that object. But here, the four Kumaras wish to see the Lord more and more and more. So they had been meditating on Brahman. They had seen the Lord in their hearts, and now they were actually seeing him face to face. And he was staggeringly attractive. Prabhupada's purport to 42. The beauty of the Lord was so enchanting that it could not be sufficiently described. It is impossible to describe. The goddess of fortune is supposed to be the most beautiful sight within the spiritual and material creations of the Lord. She has a sense of being the most beautiful. Yet her beauty was defeated when the Lord appeared. In other words, the beauty of the goddess of fortune is secondary in the presence of the Lord. In the words of Vaishnava poets, it is said that the Lord's beauty is so enchanting that it defeats hundreds and thousands of cupids, that which attracts and affects everyone within the material world if we take whatever beauty, because sometimes if our heart is affected by Cupid, one sees someone who is not actually beautiful. But by the potency of Cupid, that person will look beautiful. So Cupid, in that sense, is the beauty factor. He's the one that makes another seem very beautiful. Just like it is hunger that makes food look tasty and attractive. If one has just eaten a huge, huge, huge feast and then sees this preparation, whatever one's favorite preparations are, there's no more hunger and the food doesn't seem appealing. It's the hunger that makes the food appear appealing. So similarly, it is Cupid, the potency of Cupid, that gives beauty to another. So if we take the very potency of Cupid that contains beauty and multiply that by hundreds and thousands, it cannot compare to the Lord's beauty, His enchantingness. The Lord's beauty is so enchanting that it defeats hundreds and thousands of Cupids. He is therefore called Madan Mohan. It is also described that the Lord sometimes becomes mad after the beauty of Radharani. Poets describe that under those circumstances, although the Lord is Madan Mohan, He becomes Madan Daha, or enchanted by the beauty of Radharani. So although His beauty defeats the beauty of hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, His beauty becomes under the control, under the potency. It is overwhelmed by the beauty of Srimati Radharani. Actually, the Lord's beauty is super excellent, surpassing even the beauty of Lakshmi and Vaikuntha. The devotees of the Lord in the Vaikuntha planets want to see the Lord as the most beautiful. But the devotees in Gokul, or Krishna Loka, want to see Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. The devotees in Vrindavan, they like to see the all-powerful Lord being defeated by Srimati Radharani. The adjustment is that the Lord, being Bhakta Vatsal, or one who wants to please His devotees, assumes such features so that the devotees like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other demigods may be pleased. Here also, for the devotee sages, the Kumaras, the Lord appeared in His most beautiful feature, and they continued to see Him without satiation and wanted to continue seeing Him more and more. Interesting how Prabhupada has written. The Lord appears because He is Bhakta Vatsal. The Lord appears in such a feature that will please the specific devotee that loves Him. So He appears in one way for Lord Brahma, and He appears in other ways for the residents of Vrindavan. He appears in another way for the four Kumaras. And we saw in the earlier chapters of the first canto, if you remember, the 11th chapter. Who remembers what the 11th chapter in the first canto is about? Raise your hand if you remember. What is it about?
Arrival of Lord Krishna in Dwarka.
The?
Arrival of Lord Krishna in Dwarka.
In Dwarka, yes. And right at the end of that chapter, when Krishna enters the palaces of His queens, the queens, out of their affection and shyness, push forward their sons first to interact. And in the purports to those verses, Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna, rather than being under the influence of the queens, in fact, or rather than what was going on being similar to the lust that entraps everyone in the material world. It is something completely spiritual that was going on. Rather, Krishna, because his devotees, the queens, wanted to serve him and love him in a particular specific way, Krishna assumes the form to reciprocate with them. Because Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala. He reciprocates with everyone on all platforms. No one can avoid Krishna's reciprocation. If we wish to avoid Krishna or act towards him as if he didn't exist, he acts in a parallel way to us. And he acts samoham savabhuteshu name dveshasti napriya. He places the living entities under the control of the maya shakti, and he himself remains aloof and remains only the upadrashtano mantacha, the overseer and permitter. But everything is really being carried out by maya dakshena prakriti under the supervision of Krishna. But he himself remains aloof. But if one has only one desire in his heart, and that is to love Krishna and please Krishna, Krishna, will he have one desire in his heart? To love and please the devotees? That devotee? What do you think? I'm trying to trap someone here. Because then if you say yes, he will reciprocate in that way, then I'll say, but what happens if there's two devotees who think like that? How can he have one thing in his heart? Ah, there's an answer. He can do all kinds of things that are wonderful. So really, what is required for us is to make some steps, small as they may be, towards pleasing Krishna and removing and placing him in the center and removing ourselves from the center of our lives. What will please Krishna? And if we take steps to Krishna, then Krishna takes so many steps to us. So there, the four Kumaras, they were awed by what they saw, the beauty of what they saw of Krishna. Then in text 43, when the breeze carrying the aroma of tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages. So all of a sudden, as these perfect impersonalists were standing there gazing at the Lord, by his arrangement, some wind came, a very gentle breeze, and it picked up the fragrance of not only his lotus feet, but of the tulsi bedecking his lotus feet. And we've heard of the glories of tulsi, that all the other plants and flowers in Vaikuntha acknowledge the position of Tulsi Devi. And where is Tulsi Devi placed? At the lotus feet of the Lord. And that fragrance of the tulsi and of the lotus feet of the Lord, it entered the nostrils of those sages. They were already pure. They were above false material, false ego. They could not be affected by anything within this world. This world meaning the material world, the material realm. But when the breeze carried the fragrance, and that fragrance of the Lord's lotus feet and the tulsi entered the nostrils of their sages, they experienced a change. Vikara. Their minds were disturbed and their bodies were disturbed. They were affected. Nothing in the material world could affect them. They were transcendental. They were beyond. But this, they experienced a change both in body and mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. So this is the conversion experience of the four Kumaras that's being described. Now our acharyas, they say exactly what changes did occur. Srila Srila Swami, he says that the bodily change experienced by the four Kumaras when the fragrance entered their nostrils was the ecstatic symptom of the hairs on their body standing up. So this was completely different from anything they had experienced. And the mental change, because they experienced changes on both levels, on the physical and the mental level, was a never before experienced sense of intense happiness. This was completely beyond anything they had expected. Remember, they had traveled throughout the material world. They had gone to Vaikuntha. It was beyond anything. It was beyond Brahman. And therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, that if one takes the bliss of Brahman, and indeed there is bliss in Brahman, because there is no misery like affects everyone in the material world, so that absence of misery is great happiness. So if one takes that and multiplies that happiness of Brahmananda and multiplies it by millions and millions and millions of times, it does not equal one drop of the happiness of prema. And the four Kumaras, who were the gurus of all the impersonalists, they experienced a never before experienced happiness. And one could practically feel their Brahman realization cracking and shattering, or not the Brahman realization, because Krishna is the Parabrahman, but their thinking, perhaps thinking that this was the highest, that realization was gone forever. Prabhupada explains in his purport, it appears from this verse that the four Kumaras were impersonalists or protagonists of the philosophy of monism. They were putting forward the philosophy of monism, becoming one with the Lord as the highest. There are so many people like that. But as soon as they saw the Lord's features, their minds changed. In other words, the impersonalist who feels transcendental pleasure in striving to become one with the Lord is defeated when he sees the beautiful transcendental features of the Lord. Because of the fragrance of his lotus feet carried by the air and mixed with the aroma of tulsi, their minds changed. Instead of becoming one with the Supreme Lord, they thought it wise to be devotees, become one with desire, become one in desire with the Lord. Becoming a servitor of the lotus feet of the Lord is better than becoming one with the Lord. 44. Who would like to experience the beauty of the Lord and the fragrance with a pure heart and mind, the fragrance of his lotus feet mixed with tulsi? Yes. That is not an improper desire. When we say anya bilasita sunyam, other desires become sunyam, zero. This desire is allowed, the desire to experience the happiness and the bliss of serving Krishna. Allowed and should be there. Next text, 44. The Lord's beautiful face appeared to them like the inside of a blue lotus. So everything about him was fully spiritual, otherwise it could not affect them. His face, bluish, like the inside of a lotus, so soft. And the Lord's smile appeared to be a blossoming jasmine flower. Why? Because the Lord's teeth, rows of teeth, were like jasmine buds, or just past that stage, so whitish. After seeing the face of the Lord, the sages were fully satisfied. And when they wanted to see him further, they looked upon the nails of his lotus feet, which resembled rubies, reddish in color, jewels. Thus they viewed the Lord's transcendental body again and again. They were looking and looking and looking and looking from the head to the toes, from the smile to the rubies of his toenails. And so they finally achieved meditation on the Lord's personal feature. This is the form of the Lord which is meditated upon by the followers of the yoga process, and it is pleasing to the yogis in meditation. It is not imaginary, but factual, as proved by great yogis. The Lord is full in eight kinds of achievement, but for others, these achievements are not possible in full perfection. So he's all powerful. This is the goal of all yoga. Yoginam api sarvesham madgitena antaratmanam samam yuktatamo mataha. These are the best yogis who can actually focus their attention fully upon the Lord. There's one comment by on to 43, that before we read some parts of Prabhupada's purport to 45, I'd just like to read the comment of Srila Srila Swami and Srila Jiva Goswami on the text that describes the fragrance of the Lord, of the Lord's lotus feet and the tulsi entering the nostrils of the Lord. Srila Srila Swami says that the bliss of serving the Lord is greater even than the bliss of directly seeing him. And Srila Jiva Goswami comments on Srila Sridhar Swami's comment and says that that comment of Sridhar Swami is certainly a source of great wonder. So the highest thing, it appears, is not even to see the Lord. Even though seeing the Lord and meditating upon him, That is so extremely wonderful, and this is the goal of the yogis, to meditate upon him fully, continuously, samadhi, have the mind fixed fully and only upon him. But greater than that is serving him. And that's the position of the Vaishnavas. We'll start reading from Prabhupada's purport to 45. The success of the yoga process is very nicely described here. It is specifically mentioned that the form of the Lord as four-handed Narayan is the object of meditation for the followers of Yoga Marg. In the modern age, there are so many so-called yogis who do not target their meditation on the four-handed Narayan form. Some of them try to meditate on something impersonal or void, but that is not approved by the great yogis who follow the standard method. The real yoga marg process is to control the senses, sit in a solitary and sanctified place, and meditate on the four-handed form of Narayan, decorated as described in this chapter as he appeared before the great four sages. This Narayan form is Krishna's expansion. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement, which is now spreading, is the real topmost process of yoga practice. Because, again, even better or even more than the bliss of seeing the Lord is the position of serving Him. And that is the message and the practices of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Krishna consciousness is the highest yoga performance by trained devotional yogis. Despite all the allurements of yoga practice, the eight kinds of yogic perfections are hardly achievable by the common man. But here it is described that the Lord who appeared before the great sages is himself full of all eight of those perfections. The highest yoga marg process is to concentrate the mind 24 hours a day on Krishna. This is called Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasito bhavato mati kriyatam yadi kuti pilabhyate tatra loyam apimuyam ekalam janma koti sukriter nalabhyate. This is the most wonderful thing, the most difficult to attain thing, but it is the ideal. Somehow or another, 24 hours a day, focus the mind on Krishna. Is it difficult to do that for a conditioned soul? It's impossible to do that for a conditioned soul, because as soon as one is able to do that, one is no longer conditioned. What stops one from doing that? The modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. Those two modes. They inhibit the focusing of the mind upon Krishna, because one will immediately start, oh, I have to do this, I have to do that, there's so many important things, start scratching and jumping and looking for something to do, count the number of spots on the cushion or something, the mind will not be satisfied. But by the practice of constantly making the attempt, abhyas and vairagya, by trying to do that and continuously doing that, making the attempt and working for Krishna and using the senses for Krishna and chanting Krishna's names, trying to remove inattentiveness as we chant and focusing on Krishna's names and seeing the beauty of the deity and hearing the Shastra and associating with devotees and tasting Krishna prasadam and smelling the fragrance of garlands and incense offered to the Lord and offering prayers and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Gradually, one's spiritual taste and also Shushusho Shuradhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Syan Mahatsevyo Vipro. That by the process of serving the Mahat, the devotees, then Vasudeva Kataruchi, the taste comes. So this is the process of becoming the topmost yogi. Or as Krishna says, a yogi that's in a class all by himself. The one who is meditating upon always Shradavan Bhajate and serving with great devotion. This is the process. And also I should add one more item, the one I tend to forget, humility. Because humility gives us the ability to hold on tightly. Further down in Prabhupada's purport, how many paragraphs further? 1, 2. By meditation, one can understand that God is seated within one's heart. Even if one does not know it, God is seated within the heart of everyone. Not only is he seated in the heart of the human being, but he is also within the hearts of cats and dogs. Bhagavad Gita certifies this fact by the declaration of the Lord, Ishvara Savabhutanam Riddhishe. The Ishwara, the supreme controller of the world, is seated in the heart of everyone. Not only is he in everyone's heart, but he is also present within the atom. No place is vacant or devoid of the presence of the Lord. That is the statement of Ishopanishad. God is present everywhere. And his right of proprietorship applies to everything. The feature of the Lord by which he is present everywhere is called Paramatma. So Krishna is everywhere in these beautiful features. He's there as the Paramatma, and for a devotee, he's there as Shyamasundar or Radha Shyamasundar. So Kunti Devi, one of her prayers was Antar Bihira Vastita, although you are inside and outside of everything, we can't see you. You're everywhere, but how unfortunate I am that I can't see you. That feeling of unfortunateness gives birth to the greatest fortune if one uses it, if one's desire is there to see Krishna. And further on in the purport again, on the next page, beginning one paragraph we'll read of this. A person in full Krishna consciousness acts by the dictation of Krishna. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, dictation is received through the transparent medium of the spiritual master. When one is sufficiently trained and acts in submissive faith and love for Krishna under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master, the dovetailing process becomes more firm and accurate. What does that mean? What is the dovetailing process that becomes more firm and accurate? And what does it have to do with the training given, offered by the spiritual master, one's spiritual master, the transparent medium of one's spiritual master? What is the what does Prabhupada mean by that? The dovetailing process becomes more firm and accurate. Yes. Anyone else like to add to that? Yes. Trying to get something for ourselves from the picture. Yes.
Our desires are in harmony with
Krishna. Yes. Yes. Good. Yes.
Engage in devotional service, the purification allows us to easily align our propensities in Krishna's.
Everything aligned, yes. Yes. That's actually in from Nectar Devotion Bhaktivinoda Sindhu. That's the definition of Anyabhilashita Sanyam, of pure devotional service, is true on those three levels, body, mind, and words. When those three become fully in harmony with Krishna's desire, wanting to please Krishna, then that is pure devotional service. You wanted to add something? Yes, but it, right, but it, yes, connecting everything with Krishna. So in the beginning, one doesn't know how to do that. One doesn't know what Krishna desires. And one can imagine one is doing it and be doing completely the wrong thing. I remember before I started chanting, I was considering reincarnation, and I was, at that time I was doing so many horrible things, but I was thinking, well, anyway, if I will take another birth, certainly I will take a more elevated and better birth. Because I had no concept of what was pleasing to Krishna, what was good, what was bad, what was sinful, what was pious. No true concept of that. So all this training, philosophical, on the intellectual level, on the physical level, on every level has to take place through persons, someone to intercede, to tell the mind not this, but this. And to have, and sometimes have to tell the mind to relax its grip on a concept or an activity and push that. So a spiritual master is required for that. So one is, when one is sufficiently trained and acts in submissive and faith and love for Krishna under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master, the dovetail process becomes more firm and accurate. So that's a definition of the accuracy and firmness of the dovetailing process, of when the living entity is again aligned with Krishna's desires. When it's firm and accurate, certainly. This stage, but then you could say that submissive faith and love for Krishna, so it might even, you could say it may be higher. But even if one is just submissive, faithful and submissive, then the deed is done, practically speaking. And one is habituated and learns and has learned the process. This stage of devotional service by the devotee in Krishna consciousness is the most perfect stage of the yoga system. At this stage, Krishna, the Supersoul, dictates from within, while from without, the devotee is helped by the spiritual master, who is the bona fide representative of Krishna. From within, he helps the devotee as Chaitya, Chaitya Guru, for he is seated within the heart of everyone. Understanding that God is seated within everyone's heart is not, however, sufficient. One has to be acquainted with God from both within and without, and one must take dictation from within and without to act in Krishna consciousness. This is the highest perfectional stage of the human form of life and the topmost perfection of all yogas. And in the middle of the next paragraph. In this age, and we'll read, yes. In this age, people in general are short living. Don't live a long time in this age. And very slow to understand self-realization or spiritual life. They are mostly unfortunate. And therefore, if someone is a little bit interested in self-realization, he is likely to be misguided by so many frauds. And there are actually in the West nowadays, there are thousands and thousands and thousands and millions of people actually interested in self-realization. They somehow have some piety and they've been disenfranchised from their religion, from the religion that was dominant in their culture. Even 50 years ago, and they are unsatisfied with materialism, and they are prey to so many frauds or incomplete processes and different seminars. If you just take this seminar and pay thousands and thousands of dollars, no more problems, all happiness. And every one of those, practically speaking, is impersonal. And there's literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And it's always impersonal. And there are so few personalists preaching, teaching, offering seminars, doing this and that, and retreats. There's so few personalists. So even if someone is a little interested in self-realization, he's likely to be misguided by so many frauds. The only way to realize the perfect stage of yoga is to follow the principle of Bhagavad Gita as practiced by Lord Chaitanya. That is the simplest and highest perfection of yoga practice. Lord Chaitanya demonstrated this Krishna consciousness yoga system in a practical manner simply by chanting the holy names of Krishna as prescribed in the Vedanta, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and many important Puranas. Chanting Hare Krishna. And I remember when I first began chanting, one of my friends who was chanting with me at that time, he said, I can't believe that one could attain the highest thing by something so simple. So he wouldn't continue. But can he do something complicated? And of course, it isn't so simple. But just by chanting offensively, it's simple to understand, but not as simple to practice continuously. For it takes so much sincerity. The largest number of Indians follow this yoga process, and in the United States it is gradually spreading in many cities. This is the third canto when this was, I can't remember what year Prabhupada wrote this, but it was perhaps in the very, very late 60s or very early 70s. It is very easy and practical for this age, especially for those who are serious about success in yoga. No other process of yoga can be successful in this age. The meditation process was possible in the golden age, Satyayuga, because people in that age used to live for hundreds and thousands of years. If one wants success in practical yoga practice, it is advised that he take to the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he will actually feel himself making progress. There was a purport. Who has folio? I believe it's in the 11th canto. There's something where Jiva Goswami, or perhaps in the 12th canto, but Jiva Goswami explains about chanting Hare Krishna and why it's so specifically geared for the age of Kali. Because in different ages, the Hare Krishna mantra also had potency. But why is it specifically in Kali Yuga? Did you find it already? Okay. Do you have folio also? You looking for it? Jiva Goswami, Kali Yuga, Hare Krishna, Sankirtan. Okay, we'll stop here though until we find this quotation. It's probably in the 12th canto around Kale Doshinathe Rajanastieko Mahanguna. It's probably in the 12th canto. You have it? Okay, let me read it. It'll probably be easier for everyone to hear it. Yeah. What is it around there? Kale Doshinathe Rajan? Okay. Let's see. Maybe it is. Yes. Yes, it is. 11, purport to 11.537. This is the conclusion. So I'll read it. It is the nature of the According to Sridhar Swami, even in previous ages, such as Satyayuga, it was not possible for the living entities to achieve the perfection that is available in Kali Yuga. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this as follows. In former ages, such as Satyayuga, human beings were perfectly qualified and easily performed even the most difficult spiritual processes, meditating for many thousands of years, practically without eating or sleeping. Thus, although in any age one who completely takes shelter of the Lord's holy name gets all perfection, the highly qualified inhabitants of Satyayuga do not consider that merely moving the tongue and lips, chanting the Lord's holy names, is a complete process, and that the Lord's holy name is the only shelter within the universe. They are more attracted to the difficult and elaborate yoga systems of meditation, complete with sophisticated sitting postures, painstaking control of the breath, and deep extended meditations in trance of the personality of Godhead within the heart. In Sati Yuga, sinful life is practically unheard of, and therefore people are not afflicted with the terrible reactions seen in Kali Yuga, such as world war, famine, plague, drought, insanity, etc. Although in Sati Yuga, people always worship the personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life and meticulously followed his laws called Dharma, they do not feel themselves to be in a helpless condition, and thus they do not always experience intense love for the Supreme Lord. So in Sati Yuga, people do not think that the holy name is the only shelter because of their piety. Because of their piety, they don't have the suffering to hold so tightly to that. They do more complex things, and therefore they cannot get the shelter. They cannot take shelter, and they cannot get the result that the holy names can actually give. So the great, great opulence of Kali Yuga is so much misery and trouble and suffering in billions of different forms. If it's not the government, it's one's family. And if it's not the family causing trouble, it's one's mind. And if it's not the mind, it's the body. Or the nature, or this or that. There's always so many afflictions offered by Kali Yuga, difficulties. And if one meditates, one can get some relief. Actually, one can get relief. But, because as soon as one quiets the mind down, which is the basic process of meditation, there is some relief on a tangible level. But how long can one meditate for? One has to come out, and then the mind starts up again and giving so much trouble. And this is the, practically speaking, the main difficulty in Kali Yuga. Of course, there's the physical level, there's this level, the family level, but everyone's minds, upadruta. Kalavasmin yuge jana manda samanda matayo manda abhagya. Prabhupada paraphrased it. Upadruta. Everyone is so disturbed. Childhood so difficult. Never recover from a bad childhood. Reoccurring difficulties again and again. So difficult, and that difficulty, the stress and strain and pain of Kali Yuga, although no one likes it, is actually the best friend. Because, or not because, but if one takes this, Namasraya Kori Jatana Tumi, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, just take shelter, stay in your place. Whatever your situation is, don't think big changes have to be made, but make this one change, get to the root and core change. Chant Krishna's name and hold on tightly to Krishna's names. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there is nothing but the names to be gained in this world. Maybe you could find also that Kaler Doshinate Rajan. You can't find it because I have it. But there's other in the 12th canto. And then also, here's one I can find though, if I can work this contraption. No, I won't be able to. I don't like those. When the very last verse of the Bhagavatam. Does anyone know it? That one you'll be able to find really quickly. The very last verse of the Bhagavatam. You have it? You have a loud voice, so. You have it? You have it? Does anyone have it? There should be a set of books in here, by the way. Prabhupada's books. But they're not here. There should be a set of books in the classroom of all of Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, the devotion. Yeah, okay. What, but
it's a 10-volume.
It's a 10-volume set. Does anyone have the last verse?
Yes.
Who said yes? Could you read it, either hand it to me or read it really loudly? Yes, louder. Final verse of the Bhagavatam. You find that Kala Dosinate Rajan? Okay, now you read that one. You're plugged in though, right? Are you plugged in? Okay. Read the translation. Kala Dosinate Rajan Astiye Kumahanguna Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambraje.
My dear King, although Kali Yuga is in the ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom.
Yes, and what's the verse right before that?
What's the verse number?
What's that text number?
Text number 51.
Chapter
12.3.51.
And what's the verse right before it?
My dear King, the personality of God is the ultimate controller. He is the supreme soul and the supreme shelter of all beings. When meditated upon by those
who are about to die,
He reveals to them their own eternal spiritual identity.
He reveals to them their own spiritual identity. Yes.
Short question. You mentioned that if one is submissive, then the deed is done.
What I meant?
What you mean?
Then one gets trained. If one becomes submissive, when one is sufficiently trained and acts in submissive in faith and love for Krishna, under the directions of a bona fide spiritual master. So that allows one to become trained how to please Krishna. So if one is acts in this way, these simple principles, then the dovetailing process of taking us or aligning us with Krishna's desire is complete. Any other questions or comments?
In the verse where it says that the Lord appeared in front of the Kumaras,
yes,
before they could see him within their hearts.
Yes.
How do we relate that to the fact that they were impersonalists? It seems that they were already seeing the Lord within their hearts.
Yes. See, there's two kinds. This is in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, perhaps in the second chapter, it describes how there's different types of yogis. And they all, out of some of them may be personalists and some of them may be impersonalists. And some of them, and both of those, personalists and impersonalists, will meditate upon the Lord in the heart. But the impersonalists will think that the beyond that is the impersonal. So, although it doesn't state it clearly, that could answer the question. And then those impersonalists, they go to Brahman because that's their desire. Because everything rests upon one's desire. So Krishna, yaya tamam prapadyante, he reciprocates with their desire and takes their impersonalists. In Dhruva Maharaj? Dhruva? Bharat Maharaj, do you mean? See, I'll answer it on one level, and I won't answer it on another level. I'll start with the level I won't answer it on. No, I'll start with the level I will answer it on. Their fall down wasn't a real fall down. It was service. Krishna wanted something to happen, and it happened. And they cooperated with it. They had, on one level, they just happened. And Krishna wanted someone to fight with in the material world that was powerful, or more than one person, and they were chosen for the task. So this is Leela on one level. So one can't take Leela and say that this is... How can a Leela, because Leela is happening by the desire of the Lord, and say, how could it happen that someone who's already on Vaikuntha fall down? It's Leela. And on the level that I'm not going to answer on is how does the jiva fall down from the spiritual world? I'm not going to bother with that one. Because my understanding is that Krishna knows, Prabhupada explains this in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna knows, and we can't really understand this. You know, you can explain it possibly from this side, you can explain it from that side. We can't understand because, as Bhaktivinoda Thakura explained it, its occurrence occurred before time, and everything is cause and effect for us. So it's something very inconceivable. Sometimes we say that desiring to merge with the Lord is the last snare of Maya. But sometimes we say trying to understand where the jiva came from is the last snare of Maya. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakura also explains this, if you try to understand too much, you'll become bewildered and become an atheist. But you weren't asking like that, perhaps. But that was the level I wasn't going to answer it on. We can't understand these things. Because if you say we came from this, you know, how could from the Shantaras, or the, you can fall down. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who is in my abode doesn't fall. Whatever position you take, you'll find a lot of people angry at you. While Prabhupada explains the position that I take is his position, explains in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna knows why. Why and how this occurred. Anyone have that on the Bhagavad Gita? 13th chapter?
I think
somewhere in there. Krishna can understand these things. We're so little. And in the spiritual world, you can also understand. So cope with it. But it comes up naturally. And Prabhupada will mention it in relationship to this. Yes. That Brahmananda and compared to Goloka Vrindavan? Little. Because that's the quality of moksha lagudakrit, the quality of bhakti that minimizes the value of liberation. This is bhava bhakti. And it minimizes liberation. So one drop of that is incomparable to prema. Premankur. So not that all of us are, I could say for myself that I'm not on the platform of bhakti, so of bhava. So that comparison is really true in relationship to bhava bhakti. Because we still, there's influences of maya, of the lower modes of material nature. So if it's so ecstatic in whatever we have, just imagine. If we're on the platform of bhava bhakti, where we've actually attained the shelter of the internal energy, and we know who we are in relationship to Krishna, our relationship with Him. So until that point, liberation may be quite appealing. Did you want to ask something? Did you have something to ask? I thought you had. Yes?
And Prabhupada explains here that one has to be acquainted with God from both within and without.
One must.
One has to be acquainted.
Acquainted?
God from both within and without.
Yes. Yes.
Now, for the devotees, like the Prabhupada disciples, who is Guru Master, is not physically present. So, what is that without and without? It seems like it remains only from within, because there is the scriptures and there is discrimination from the person.
But one could also say, why does it only apply to disciples of Srila Prabhupada? I mean, is Lokanath Swami in this room? Or you're not directly online with him continuously,
yeah,
plugged into your ear. But the training, in other words, one needs a spiritual master. That's the point. One needs to be trained by a spiritual master. That's the point. Someone to say, no, don't do it that way, do it this way. Do this, 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 and this, and this. That's the point. It's a simple point. To get acquainted with the Lord, one... to be able to hear the super soul, the Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam, one needs generally some prior training.
Is the Vaidhi Bhakti the root of revelation? Is that training? Or is there something?
Of course it's training.
Is there something more than that?
Yeah. Love Krishna.
Well, that's part of that. Well, that's the goal, obviously.
Yeah, but also there's training on how to do that, how to place Krishna in the center, how to love the deity, how to serve the deity. But what I'm saying is that we don't want to minimize Vaidhi. because there's vidhi even in Raganuga Sadhana. You should do this, you shouldn't do that. Did I understand what you were saying?
I think so. I mean, this is a many directions. That thought.
What thought?
Which I brought up.
That
the direction from within.
Oh yes, that yes. So one has other Vaishnavas one can get direction from.
It seems like it comes always back to me that I have to discriminate even the direction from Vaishnavas to the master, that what it actually means ultimately.
Yes and no. I mean, if someone says you have to chant 16 attentive rounds a day at least, for example, so there's not that much great discrimination that has to be done in there, or you should follow this rule and that rule, but on certain more subtle points, and then one gets that confirmed too. That's what Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami when he questioned him. One should get what it is the nature of a sadhu to get his realizations confirmed from outside, not only rely on the inside realizations. Why? Because the mind is very tricky. And sometimes instead of hearing what Krishna wants, we're hearing what the mind wants.
That would be the revealing incompetence, the internal realization. I reveal that confidence related to devotee I have trust.
Yeah.
And then again, I'm back in the situation to evaluate.
Well, what's wrong with evaluating and thinking deeply about something? That's good.
So it's the within which actually is more prominent in a devotee's life.
Well, that's your conclusion on that, but I'm not sure how you... Because it's so important, why does it make it more prominent? Maybe I'm not understanding.
Well, also Prabhupada says in the beginning, there is the Vidaru, and then Prabhupada says in the third one,
but I somehow I'm not following the way the line of thought on it. That
he wants to say, like, he wants to say that it's written that we get direction from within, and if the spiritual, by saying without me, the spiritual master. So proper disciples don't have their spiritual master in physical presence. So how do they get direction in his actions?
Is that what you're saying?
Moderately, yeah.
Yeah, well, so many ways. First of all, he's given so many directions. We hear his books, listen to his tapes. We have God brothers, we have holy nephews and nieces to instruct us. In fact, everyone's always telling everyone what to do, as far as I figure. Maybe it's burning, the question is burning in a way that, burning in within you in a way that I'm not able to. Maybe you can think about it internally a little more and present it externally to me later. Yes.
I'm just thinking also in relation to that, the letter of devotion and letter of instruction both are their expansions of Bhagavatam. And in those books, everything is there. And in fact, at the end of the explanation of the items of devotional service, Prabhupada, paraphrasing it, because somebody says, these items are meant to engage the mind, body, and speech fully in Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
So, if we can follow those items, we'll be experienced. And the more tune us, more highly tune us to hearing the chapter and being aware of what the words are saying around us.
Is that relevant? You were. But yes.
Just on a simple level, when I read the Bhagavatam the first year of my Krishna consciousness, it meant something. But then I read it after another year or two, and then after another year or two.
Yes.
And I got so much more. I didn't see that before when I read it.
Yes.
So just the process is like that. It's instructions are almost coming.
Yeah, and also there's from without the whole universe will instruct us by Krishna's grace if we're open, if we desire to be instructed, we're submissive. If we want instruction. Yeah.
Coming back to the falling of the jivas.
I was just trying to get away from the falling of the jivas, but go ahead.
Well, Prabhupada says that the reason why pure souls have an existential circumstance.
Where is this? Where are you reading
34.
From? 34. 44 or 34?
34.
Okay, let me get there.
Let me get there.
Okay, where is it again that you're reading from?
The reason for a pure soul is coming into existential.
This is I'm reading 30. Yes, the reason why pure souls come into the existential circumstances of the material world, which is considered to be the criminal department of the Supreme Lord, is stated in Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter. It is stated that as long as a living entity is pure, he is in complete harmony with the desires of the Supreme Lord. But as soon as he becomes impure, he is in disharmony with the desires of the Lord. By contamination, he is forced to transfer to this material world, where the living entities have three enemies, namely desire, anger, and lust. Yes?
So he's giving causes and he's giving verse in each situation simultaneous and evidence. So the question is that after reading this, one may conclude that whatever the jiva was before, she was or he was influenced by each situation.
But then obviously one asks the question, if there's no maya there, how could he be influenced by Ichandvesha, duality, material duality, and lust and anger and greed?
So how can this be the cause?
Huh?
So how this can be the cause?
There's some... One could say about this one... No, it says that the transfer to the material world where the living entities have those three enemies. So those... That has to do with after they're in the material world that those exist. But there's some contamination that exists. What is that contamination? How could there be a contamination in the spiritual world? So Prabhupada at times answers this question by saying that there's always a chance of misuse of free will, otherwise there can't be love. So I'm not sure if that addressed your question, but the question is, the contamination or impurity, there's some impurity somewhere that causes the living entity to come down. How can that exist in the spiritual world? You have a problem. Yeah. Whatever side you take, there's a problem. Do you want to? But it's not the lust, anger, and the desire, anger, and lust that's there. That comes later after one acquires a false ego and is under the control of the three modes of material nature. Oh, I don't think we can actually understand. Which is what I was saying before. Where is that Bhagavad Gita? Where's the Bhagavad Gita reference? Can I see a Bhagavad Gita at least? Does anyone have a... Is there a Bhagavad Gita here?
Yes.
Prabhupada says different things at different times. If... As the Shastra perhaps... Chapter 13. And then we'll end it. Yes. This is 20. Chapter 13, 20. This is what Prabhupada says about the living entities. Excuse me, Parma, just one moment. With the coming forth of the material nature, these living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. That is the mystery of this material creation. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned within material nature. It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with material nature, because that's the issue. How is it possible that they could come in contact with material nature? How can impurity be present, which means a product of the material nature? So Prabhupada says it really does not matter. So the whole concept of cause and effect, which is the issue here, it really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with the material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. I don't think we can say it's like this, or we could say it's like this, and we can fight about it, but I don't. It seems to me that Krishna knows, and liberated souls who are above time can know. But we cannot know, actually. We can say, yes, it's like this, and we can fight with the people who say, yes, it's like that. But I think it's different ways of describing the same thing, which we actually can't comprehend at this point. And for people... and for people who really like to know answers for everything, it's very frustrating. But that's the way life is. that's the when the question comes up, this is the usual the quotation that I take shelter of, that and what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that one can't, it's beyond time. How the finite soul cannot understand with his finite intelligence that which happens beyond time. Because our mind works by the principles of cause and effect, which are affected by time. Yes?
In Jivadharma, Srila Bhaktivinoda says, don't search for this answer. For this answer here, it's lying in the spirit of the
world.
The
answer to this is, that's basically. We can say it's like this, and you can't say. You can say it's right, and you can say it's wrong. You can say it's like this, and you can say it's right and it's wrong. It's like trying to describe something very great, very, very great and infinite. When you describe it from this point of view, it looks like this. When you describe it from this point of view, it looks like that. That's my understanding. Which is, I don't know.
Last time in the retreat class,
yeah.
You spoke about this, and in that chapter, you represent that we should not bother how we train
others. Oh, what Prabhupada said.
You should just take it out and progress as
well. Get out. And hold on to it. That's another frustration. You can't even figure out how you got here, what you did wrong, and here you are. It's another frustration. Oh, Krishna, let me hold on to your holy names. Another reason to hold on to Krishna's holy names. Okay. Any last comment or question? Yes. Yes. Yeah. They do that every once in a while. Later it will turn out they tried to stop Lakshmi. What? Lakshmi Devi. And they curse them, and she cursed them. So they get into trouble. It's always, Prabhupada's secretaries used to have the same problem. You try to stop them, and they get very angry at you and curse you. And then Prabhupada would say, because the job of a secretary is to be in that kind of trouble all the time. Like when he's taking the position of doorkeeper. Because Prabhupada would tell them, the secretaries, why should I be disturbed by all these people who are just don't want to talk about Krishna? So keep them away. And then when they would come, and they would, secretary would keep them away, and that they would push their way through, and Prabhupada would say, why have you told them not to? And that way they didn't get angry at Prabhupada, the secretary had to absorb it. So ultimately it's the same point practically, because it's Krishna's desire, but the gatekeepers get the mercy of getting everyone angry at them. Because sometimes the Lord may be resting, he doesn't want to be disturbed, okay, so they... But the four Kumaras didn't want to see that, hear that. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.